He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Huh? Where was I born?
That's right. I said, where were you born?
Hey, are you one of those dudes that do horoscopes, man? Hey, I'm a Cancer with a bad moon.
Right here, El Fago. Watch my lips. Where were you born?
I was born in East L.A., man. I was born in East L.A.
Oh, yeah, you're born in East L.A. Well, let's see your green card, huh?
Green card? I'm from East L.A.
All right, well, then who's president of the United States?
Oh, that's easy, man. That guy that used to be on Death Valley days, John Wayne.
All right, let's go. Come on.
Feliz cumpleaños. Happy birthday, best amigo, Cheech Marin. From Cheech and Chong, he's one of the funniest, sharpest, smartest, loving, loyal men I have ever known. One of my best friends, the father of modern marijuana laws.
Yeah, right.
I stopped counting how many countries he and I had visited together. Sometimes physically, sometimes spiritually.
But good for you guys.
Yeah, but good for us. Good for us. I want to, that's not a natural segue, but I really have to talk about what happened with El Chapo, Shorty. It is really this elaborate escape by El Chapo. Joaquin Guzman, his real name, will definitely help fuel Donald Trump's assertion that our southern neighbor, Mexico, is lawless, dysfunctional, and corrupt. And I have no argument, basically, with that contention. Having done several exposés, I actually lost count of how many exposés I've done of the Mexican judicial system, focusing on the conditions in the prisons and the corruption and how people can buy a very cushy life behind bars. Or in this case, for the second time, El Chapo, this notorious drug lord, has elaborately escaped from a supposedly super secure Mexican prison. The first time he got out in a laundry basket. This time it was a tunnel, like a mile long.
It's something they took a long time to build.
And again, I mean, much more even than the escape upstate New York from Denamora, which was two guys who seduced a lady into giving them the tools they needed to saw their way out. This guy had to dig a tunnel a mile long. They ventilated it. They lighted it. This is like Hamas in Gaza.
Even better, though. There was a motorcycle waiting for him, apparently, at the end of the tunnel.
A motorcycle waiting. I think was the motorcycle at the end or the beginning?
Maybe it was the beginning. I don't know.
I think he used the motorcycle to run through the tunnel, got out, maybe to a plane waiting for him. We laugh, but this is a very serious dude. This is a very, very bad guy. He was sought in this country eagerly by authorities for extradition here to stand trial for a host of charges ranging from massive drug trafficking to murder. And the fact that he managed to escape, already being used by Trump, Donald Trump, to fuel his contention that Mexico is the font of all evil. El Chapo must be caught. I mean, the president, our president, has to make it a law enforcement priority. I doubt if El Chapo will run here, but we've got to give the Mexicans whatever assets they need to recapture this guy. They caught him again after he escaped, but he did it again, and this time he did it in such a way as to humiliate the government of Mexico. And they really had it coming. This was the most wanted man they had. This was the person most eagerly sought by U.S. authorities. This is the person who, by all accounts, they said they could handle. They said they could take care of him. They said they could hold El Chapo, prosecute El Chapo in prison for life. El Chapo. And guess what? El Chapo now is free. So Donald Trump already tweeting out, here's one. Mexico's biggest drug lord escapes from jail. Unbelievable corruption and USA is paying the price. I told you so. Trump, however, would kick his ass. I guess he's saying that he and El Chapo in a face-to-face, Trump would kick his ass. I don't know. Now that more from Trump. Now that the Mexican drug lord escaped from prison, everyone is saying that most of the cocaine, etc., coming into the U.S. comes over the border. Another one, the U.S. will invite El Chapo, the Mexican drug lord who just escaped prison, to become a U.S. citizen because our leaders can't say no. See, that's where it goes a bridge too far.
Right. Then you start to say, come on.
Come on.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say that there's unbelievable corruption, which there is and definitely proven. Another thing to challenge El Chapo to a face-to-face duel, which would be kind of entertaining. I'd bet on Trump. But now to say that El Chapo, to inflate or conflate the escape of the Mexican drug lord from a Mexican prison with our leaders can't say no to Mexicans becoming U.S. citizens. I mean, it's kind of a cheap shot. It really is a cheap shot. El Chapo and the Mexican drug cartels used the border unimpeded like it was a vacuum cleaner sucking drugs and death right into the U.S., which, of course, I think begs the question, who's consuming all these drugs? Is it the Mexicans consuming all the drugs that are flooding across? Who is it?
It's regular Americans.
Regular Americans. Yeah. What a market. What a market. When will people in the media start to apologize to me for my statement Mexico is sending, which turned out to be true, El Chapo? Mexico is sending drug dealers and rapists to the country. I don't know. What is Elon in Connecticut? What are you thinking about, Elon?
Yeah, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. Listen, I just like to say something that I really admire your passion, and I mean it. You're passionate about talking in behalf of people who come here south of the border, which is really nice, but you're doing actually a disservice to yourself because you are, at least that's how it comes across, you are lumping with those people that are coming to basically support themselves, families, also a lot of the criminal elements. You're not talking really about all the drug and gangs that come from south of the border. And if you do, you're really barely touching it. And you know something, actually, a few weeks ago, I think you interview a lady, I think an activist, a black activist, and when you touch about the point about the crimes there, her response was, well, let us take care of it. It's the same kind of attitude. It's basically saying, okay, don't touch them because they're one of us. And by this, there are a lot of fine people in minority community, okay? But they're all being painted all the same way.
Elon, I admire your passion, and I would expect from the sound of your voice that you are someone sympathetic to immigration.
Well, I think people should come here legally, okay, as I was, okay? And I appreciate...
So how did you get here? Just curious.
Well, I really don't want to go into personal matters because that doesn't really mean anything, okay? But the point is here is, you know, people came here and many people coming and still coming here legally, okay? And the fact that somebody
I appreciate it.
Years to get here and then somebody try to cut the line, this is not acceptable.
Okay, I got it, Lon. I didn't mean to interrupt you there, buddy. And I appreciate the call.
I think from that accent and from his name, my guess is he took El Al to get here.
El Al is exactly how he got here, right? I was going to say, could have been a PSA for El Al. But, you know, which reminded me that most or nearly most, certainly in the 40 percentile, of the undocumented immigrants who are here came on visas, whether from Israel. I'm not sure what the Israeli deal is, what the situation is with Israel. But I do know that the vast majority, or not the majority, a near majority of undocumented immigrants come here with legal visas, like the 9/11 hijackers. They come with legal visas, and then they end up overstaying the visa. And that's where the illegality comes from. It's not the image of the of the poor brown guy or woman pouring over the southern border. As I understand it, in the last year or two, and I'll get the statistics before, and I don't want the show to be about immigration necessarily. I'll talk about it. I want to talk about it in the context of Trump and in the context of this jailbreak. Talk about Mexican dysfunction. But I don't want to just be hung up on immigration. But I do believe that Trump has, it's like he's gotten a short, vibrant, energetic spike in his presidential aspirations by seizing on what has classically been the most incendiary issue you can possibly grab for some reason or other, and it could be because of cable news in the last 10 years, but undocumented immigration has become such a raw issue, and Trump so far has harnessed that. But I wonder if that's going to last. How long can that rage last? You know, I guess as long as El Chapo escapes and the undocumented immigrant kills a 32-year-old innocent woman in San Francisco, we'll have plenty of fuel for the fire. But my feeling is that at some point it's going to be about other issues, bigger issues in terms of their cosmic importance. But what do you think? I'm very interested in you. How was your weekend? Mine was good, except my boat broke down, but it's another story.
On the water?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Okay, welcome back. 24 minutes after 10 o'clock. I appreciate your calling in. Let's start with Dan in New Jersey. What's up, Dan?
Good morning, Geraldo. I've had it up to here, frankly, with both every issue being only examined on both extremes. You have Trump making obviously inflammatory comments with a real grain of truth right down the middle, and you have people on the other side, and I have to include you in this group, who have a knee-jerk reaction every time anybody has a criticism of anything involving immigrants. We're anti-Brown, No, most of the people coming over the border, and I see them in day-to-day life, are good, hard-working people. Everybody knows that. Everybody with a brain can see that. But some of them aren't. And the government needs to protect us from criminals who come across the border. That's not a reach. This is not a logical stretch. You don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out the government's role should be to protect people from criminals crossing the border. We should have at least enough screening to get the criminals and send them back and keep them.
And how would you do that, Dan? Yeah. How would you do that? Just curious.
I would put a lot of people on the board. I would stop all the illegals coming over. I would examine everyone coming in, and I would make it easier for good, hardworking people to come in who will just want to escape from the poverty in Mexico.
Let's take your suggestion there. What you said is you would make it more difficult for the illegals and easier for the innocent, hardworking, right?
Yes.
That's a great idea. I'm all for that. Now, to me, that would be the approach that someone like Donald Trump could have used, where he would have accomplished exactly the same thing in terms of bringing attention to the border, but with enough compassion and pragmatism that it resonated with all people, not just the narrow group that he's appealing to now. He's ahead in the Republican primary. I mean, he's tied with Jeb Bush, 15-16%. But that's a minority at 16% of 100% with just the Republicans who vote in the primaries. And that's not even counting the Democrats. If you want to appeal to the nation, then an idea like yours, Dan, is a great idea. I'm all for it.
But I think that's the reason that business people like Trump don't make good politicians, because someone would have toned down his message. They would have said, there's a way to say what you're saying.
Yeah, I tried. I talked to him personally. I tried. But he...
Before he made
he's
it.
He's stubborn. Yeah, before he made it, I don't know that he knew he was going to say it. But, Dan, I appreciate it. Fine, smart call. Here's John in also in New Jersey. What's on your mind, buddy?
How you doing, Robin? Yeah, so 2 years ago I had a break-in in my house, and I had a 13-year-old and 9-year-old at home alone. My daughter was watching my son, and our landscaper actually broke into the house while the kids were home. And thankfully, they ran to the neighbor's house, and the police came and arrested this individual. But he actually ended up getting more rights and more support than I did as the person that had the burglary happen.
Well, John, could you back up a little bit? Just back up and give us a little more detail on what happened with your children in the house.
Yeah, so my wife and I were both working, and neither of our cars were home, and our landscaper was in the backyard, jumped off his lawnmower, climbed in through the back window, and actually got confronted by my daughter in the hallway, asking him what he was doing in our home. He was actually heading up into our master bedroom. So he turned around and he climbed back out the window and then finished cutting my lawn and my neighbor's lawn. So, you know, thankfully he didn't do anything to the kids. But, you know, that's what happened.
So he entered the house, he got caught, left the house, and then continued cutting the lawn. What happened to the criminal case?
So ultimately, he ended up, we ended up just delaying. I just kept, you know, deciding what I wanted to do. And his court-appointed attorney actually said, if you want to keep playing this game where you're delaying it, I'm going to make your kids testify. And when I reached out to the prosecutor and we started talking back and forth, they said, yeah, you know, if you keep delaying, ultimately their attorney's going to make your kids testify. And it turns out we found out that his family got rental assistance, food stamps, and everything because he was the primary breadwinner. They ended up getting all of this support from the state, even though they were illegal immigrants. They ended up getting all this support, and I had to pay for my own attorney's advice, my own kids' counseling. That all had to be covered by me personally.
That's an awful story. What ultimately happened to him?
So he ended up getting detained for 135 days, at which point the lawyer said, if you delay again, we're going to make this go to trial. So I went down to court, and the judge actually said he was held longer due to the delays than if we had just let it go. He would have been out in about 40 days. But it turns out he had an ICE detainer from another state, and they never enforced that ICE detainer. He was actually released again into the U.S. because he didn't touch the kid.
Where is he right now?
We don't know, but he's still here. We don't know where he is.
And his children were born abroad, not here?
Yes.
So he would not have been covered by Obama amnesty?
Nope. I just felt angry
I definitely understand your anger, man. If someone came in my house with my kids were there, I would have killed them. I mean, if I called them.
Yeah, if I could have, I would have.
Yeah, I got you. All right, I appreciate your call. Thank you, and I'm sorry for that experience. How are the kids, by the way? I guess it's gone. Well, I hope they're okay. Welcome back. 38 minutes after 10 o'clock. The Dow is up 185, I guess because of good news out of Europe and Greece and blah, blah, blah. I don't know.
Maybe the Iran deal, which they say is sort of close. Maybe that's helping fuel it. Who knows?
Who knows? And Christy, you said, was in second place during your newscast. I mean, you got Bush and Trump tied. What are the numbers?
I can tell you the numbers, and it's really most amazing in some ways for Governor Christie. So this new poll, it's out from Reuters, and it has essentially Jeb Bush and Trump tied in first place. There's like a tenth of a point difference between the two. And then in second or third place, depending on how you're calculating it all, is Governor Christie, who came at 9.5%. Now, you remember just 2-3 weeks ago, all the polling showed him barely a tenth among the, what is it now, 15 candidates in the race. Now, in this poll, he's number three. So that's a pretty far jump from number 10 to number three.
Is Scott Walker, the Wisconsin governor who announced today or is announcing today, is he registering?
Yeah, he's in fifth place in this poll. So it goes, I'll give you the details. It's Jeb Bush, Trump, Governor Christie, Rand Paul, and then Scott Walker.
That's interesting. It's very interesting. And I would have those top five just that way, too. I mean, my own sense, just from the caller's vibes and over at Fox News, I would have it. Christie's the big surprise there.
You know what the other interesting thing in this poll is they would take samplings of different candidates against one another if they took everybody out of the race. So in other words, they had Bush, Rubio, and Trump as the only three candidates you could vote for. And in that case, Bush took this commanding lead when he was matched against just Trump and Marco Rubio.
I get it. So it's Bush and Trump, but when you take away everybody else, then it's Bush.
Becomes all Bush, yeah.
All Bush. And I would think that's what I was talking about. That this whole immigrant thing gets you this spike within a certain population, but when measured against the American people, it's a relatively small blip unless he can continue to parlay it and strategically win by, you know, emphasizing this issue in various jurisdictions where it matters a lot, like Iowa. And who knows what could happen? You win here, you win there, and then all of a sudden you've got a whole bunch of victories. You got all kinds of money. Still a desperate long shot, but my goodness, has Trump surprised so far. Let me take this call. Vince, here's Vince from New Jersey. Vince, thanks for calling. What's up?
I got to tell you, I'm Puerto Rican, and I'm not offended by what Donald Trump has to say. And a lot of people that identified themselves as different Hispanic groups last week called your show when you were out, and they also supported Trump, as well as a lot of African-American voters. And you have to look at the other issues besides what Donald Trump is just talking about as far as the violent crime, the drugs. The fact is that every single illegal alien here is violating tax laws, state tax laws, federal. They're violating identity laws. Some of them work under fake IDs. Some of them work under the table. Most of them are committing some type of crime that if I committed, I'm going to jail for. If you committed, you're going to jail. And to, and registration on cars.
They go to jail, too, for those crimes.
That's the real reason they go to jail.
When people talk about criminal aliens, generally speaking, the crimes for which they are convicted have to do with crossing the border and using fake Social Security numbers. What that does not address is the fact that they pay Social Security tax on their fake Social Security cards, but because they're fake, they have zero chance of redeeming the money that they have paid into the trust fund, the Social Security trust fund.
That's not true because...
It is true, man. I did two books on it. Don't tell me it's not true. You can disagree with me, but don't tell me it's not true.
Well, there's some of them that happens, but there's a bunch of them. And this is what Donald Trump is talking about when he said that this administration is basically inviting him. Last year, we saw every day how they were coming across in train loads. And they were coming across from Central
America. You're
talking
about when the children were crossing.
And the Mexicans, they were everybody. They weren't just children. It turned out that the smaller percentage of them were children. That was what the media focused on to make their point. But if you look at let's go to the immigration laws of Mexico. Let's go to the immigration laws of Guatemala. Let's use their immigration laws and see how many of their people can stay in this country. Just do what they do. I mean, why do we have to have no immigration law? Why do we have to have black Americans, white Americans, be unemployed and drive down the employment, the salaries of Americans?
According to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that's not happening.
Yeah, they're trying to bring them in because they want cheap labor. The Chamber of Commerce
could be
the big force behind all of this.
Could be.
Because they want cheap labor in America.
So let me ask you, you're an interesting person. You say you're of Puerto Rican descent?
Absolutely. My mother was born in Mayagüez.
Oh, how about that?
And I'm half Italian, half Puerto Rican.
What a great combo.
I got the worst of both worlds.
I'm Jewish in Puerto Rico. I think mine's weird.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah, it's unusual.
So, what do you think about Puerto Rico and this whole financial bond the Commonwealth is in right?
It's a picture of things to come here and all over the world. I mean, if you look, the thing is about the United States is its portion, you know, it's separated by states with cities. You look at New Jersey. And then you could take a city like Trenton that's not supporting itself in any shape or form. You look at Newark. You look at Camden. It's going to be all over the United States. You go to Detroit. You go to Chicago, it's nearly bankrupt.
Well, I just want to point out one thing. Every city you just mentioned, with the exception of Chicago, has very small Latino population. Very small. The troubled cities of New Jersey, Newark, Camden, Trenton, those are not Latino cities.
No, that's not true. There's a lot of Central and South America in Trenton. There's a lot of them in Newark. There's a lot of in Camden. My son has two friends that are black, live in Trenton, and their neighborhood is a majority of either Central or South American, Mexican. They're not. It's not a majority of black in a lot of sections of Trenton. And if you go through all these areas, and that's why Donald Trump is resonating with a lot of African Americans, because he's going to those people and he's bringing them in. He had the one guy that he showed on Saturday.
Even that fellow, as tragic as he was, that case was 7 years old. I mean, it doesn't make it any less raw, but there are so relatively few of these cases. I'm sorry to say that if you're going to base your argument, don't base it on crime, because I just have a brand new study in front of me. I'm holding. I printed it out. You want me to read it for me? The evidence that immigrants tend not to be criminals is overwhelming. To begin with, there is an inverse relationship between crime and immigration. Crime rates in the United States have trended downward for many years at the same time that the number of immigrants have grown. Second, immigrants are less likely to be incarcerated than the native-born. And third, immigrants are less likely than the native-born to engage in criminal behaviors that tend to land one in prison. No matter how you look at the issue, the inescapable conclusion is that immigrants are, on average, less prone to criminality than the U.S. native born population. It's a brand new study. I just have it. I got it in my hands right now.
Well, that's why I brought up the point that I brought up, that Donald Trump should not focus as much on violent crimes and drugs, and he should focus on the fact that every single illegal alien.
Well, I agree that is an issue.
I can't violate those laws. I can't go get a fake driver. I'd be in jail if I had a fake driver's license. They wouldn't let me out.
Why are you so impassioned about this issue?
Because you know why I'm impassioned about this issue? Because I'm an American.
And my I'm not buying that. I want to know why you personally, why Vince are so conversant with this issue.
The fact that you're asking me, as an American, why I'm concerned about
concern is one thing. To articulate and be briefed on it is another, and I'm just curious why you've taken this issue to heart.
Because, first of all, you're changing my whole point. You keep talking
about... I'm just asking you a question about yourself. You don't want to answer. You don't have to.
No, I answered it, because I'm an American first, and it's more important. What Obama's doing is trying to change...
So how have the undocumented immigrants affected your life in a negative way?
I see many of them. I've had some of them do yard work, and I got to tell you, they're nice people. They're hardworking people.
You're admitting to this crime of using undocumented?
I didn't know they were, but I'm telling you.
That's the Trump excuse. Vince, I love your call, and you're a great guy and very smart, but I've got to take a break.
All right, go ahead.
Thanks very much for calling.
Number five, Donald Trump weighs 240 pounds. 250 with cologne. Number four, Trump would like all Americans to know that that thing on his head is free range. And number three, if president, instead of pardoning a turkey on Thanksgiving, plans to evict the family on Thanksgiving. Now, wait a minute. And number three, we have a tie. It's tied with, that's not a hairdo, it's a wind advisory. Number two, Donald Trump has pissed off so many Mexicans, he's starring in a new movie entitled No Amigos. And the number one interesting fact about Donald Trump, thanks to Donald Trump, the Republican mascot is also an ass. There you go.
David Letterman coming out of retirement. And he was lamenting the fact that Trump was not running for president during the time Letterman had his late night show. So now he's come out of retirement. I guess he was with some colleagues. Do you know the circumstances?
Yeah, it was in San Antonio. He was with Steve Martin and Martin Short.
Oh, funny.
They're doing some comedy tour, and he just showed up on stage.
Just like that.
Yeah.
To do Trump jokes.
Yeah.
But aren't the Trump jokes falling flat? I mean, to me, they seem so dated. Nah, the hair again.
Oh, the hair has been a joke for years and years and years, yeah.
You know, it's like my broken nose. It was like 1989 or something.
Or Al Capone's
fault. Al Capone's fault.
Half the people that call here, they mention that. Yeah.
Al Capone's fault.
Like they're stabbing you.
I think that if you're going to go after Trump, you got to go for something a little more current than his hair, his hairdo. I just wanted to give you a heads up. In about a half hour, we're really very honored that stopping by our studio high above Madison Square Garden in the shadow of the Empire State Building will be Alejandro Toledo. President Toledo was president of Peru in the first decade of the 2000s. He's a very progressive, open-minded person who has Stanford and Harvard educated. He has a real vision for the economic future of South America, how that continent can be modernized and made more compassionate, how people who are now in poverty can become part of the rising middle class. A lot of it pegged to the fact that Latin America is only going to continue its growth now with all these new oil and mineral deposits that they've been discovering. And, it's already done a lot. It's moved a lot. And I want to ask him, obviously, about, among other things, immigration and the dysfunction of the Republic of Mexico, the apparent dysfunction of the government there, and how President Toledo sees it. So that's at about 11:35 today. And what I also want to talk about, I might as well do it now. I want to get this. We'll go back to our principal topic and to your calls, 866-RALDO, 866-437-2536. Just give me a minute. I want to talk about something that seemingly minor. I mean, I usually wouldn't talk about something like this, but Eric and I, aside from the fact my boat broke down and we were homebound, we spent a couple of, and it's so funny being there without our daughter. She's been such a, you know, such a sidekick her whole life.
Oh, yeah.
And to have her in sleepaway camp is so weird. It's a big gap. Anyway, so we watched To Kill a Mockingbird. Why? Because obviously you have the new recently discovered sequel to To Kill a Mockingbird, the classic novel that we all read, or, you know, unless you cut that class, everybody was assigned it in American literature and either in high school or if not, then certainly in college, if not both, To Kill a Mockingbird. And if you didn't read the book, you saw the epic film with Gregory Peck of Harper Lee's classic novel. You know, I haven't read it since college, but I wanted very much after the publicity about Go Set a Watchman, the new sequel to Kill a Mockingbird, to review the movie. And I have to say it reminded me of what a great, I'm not going to have enough time to finish, but it's a wonderful, wonderful story of this noble attorney, a loving widower dad, Atticus Finch. And it reminded me of why I wanted to become an attorney in the first place. Atticus Finch, he represented a black man unjustly accused of rape in 1930s era, Depression era Alabama. And to read that book and how Atticus Finch defended this man, who in the book was convicted despite the fact that it was obvious he was being framed by racists. To watch that is really to see a really heroic person, a portrayal of a person as heroic. And then in Go Set a Watchman, instead of Atticus Finch, this noble person who helps a black man despite the racism of the 1930s, in Go Set a Watchman, Atticus, 30 years later, has become a racist spouting typical.
Wait, are you giving away the details of the new book?
It's awful. It's all over the place, and it's so depressing.
Yeah, but I want to read it.
You can read it, but here he is. Do we all become cranky, selfish, intolerant, rigid traditionalists?
Oh, no.
Roger McGuinn's birthday, lead singer of the Birds. You know, I've been watching Hillary Clinton. She gave that big interview to CNN a couple of days ago. I was not impressed watching her. I think that she was on the defensive. I guess, understandably, Breonna Keeler did the interview, I'm almost positive. And I'm going to get to your questions momentarily, folks, at 866-HERALDO. But I thought as she spoke, she seemed very defensive. She seemed, not particularly pleasant because she was on the defensive. But just seems to me that, you know, and she hasn't been doing a lot of interviews. This was her first big interview in a long time. I thought if I wasn't already a fan, I'm not sure I would be one. And if I was hanging on to her because of my wistful feelings about the 1990s and Bill Clinton, she's not in the 1990s anymore. And it's not going to be easy for her. This is not a slam dunk. Unless the Republicans nominate someone who's a fringe candidate or who's not going to have general appeal, I think it's going to be a real tough race for her. I think the same negatives that came out against Barack Obama, who was the fresh face, I think will come back to haunt her. I don't anticipate a huge rush to Hillary. the fact that Bernie Sanders is getting, you know, Bernie Sanders is not even a Democrat, as far as I know. He's an independent in the Senate of the United States. The fact that he's polling 30% in New Hampshire, I mean, it is close to Vermont. I get that. But that's still, that's a lot.
Yeah, but people always like a new face they haven't seen before. I mean, I think that's part of the appeal of Donald Trump, too, is that he's a new face you haven't seen before. But I think it's interesting, the Clinton campaign clearly has the strategy that she doesn't need to be out there because she's going to win the primary race, you know, in a cakewalk. But that said, will she be battle ready? I think you bring up an interesting point. She hasn't done a lot of interviews. She's not going to be doing a lot of debates. What happens when she goes one-on-one with whoever the Republican nominee is? Will she be ready for that?
Or, and I hate to be sexist about it, will she sound whiny and defensive? I mean, when you get thrown in your face, like this whole email thing, I don't know what's in the emails. I don't know if other secretaries of state have had private emails and blah, blah. I don't know about the sub. I know that Benghazi was a bunch of baloney. I mean, it was worse than that. I think that it was an awful transgression, the way she was accused of not doing everything she could, and Barack Obama was accused of not doing everything he could to save those lives once the attack began. That makes me want to spit. I get so mad. But there's no doubt that she allowed the Benghazi conditions to fester during her time as secretary. She was already, in my mind, just like Chris Christie when he ran for re-election, he was already running for president. She was already running for president when she was taking a victory lap at the end of her tenure for Secretary of State, and then Benghazi happened. Why didn't she know that it was happening? How could she not advise the President of the United States that his whole Arab Spring approach to the Middle East was a disaster in the making? You know, so I don't see how she points to her tenure as Secretary of State as a particular qualification. I think it's really, is she going to run as the lesser of two evils? You know, I don't know. I don't know where you get this whole image of competence. Where does that come from? You know, Benghazi may have been BS, but still, I mean, what did she do as Secretary of State that was so admirable that you'd want her to be President of the United States? And then when you watch her, man, she doesn't. I mean, just to me. I mean, Erica, I'm sure would get mad at me. My wife would get mad at me. That say I'm picking on her because she's an older woman. That's absolutely not the case. It is absolutely not the case. I'm not going to be like Trump and say I love Mexicans. I love our women. But there's something about her, and I'm positive that a lot of it has to do with being defensive because the questions being thrown her way are so Hillary. Right. So, you know, difficult to explain in a soundbite. All right. Let me see. Hillary, where's Hillary? She's on the line.
Here's a soundbite.
Oh, yeah, the soundbite. Yeah. All right. Let me hear her.
I think Hillary would be a terrible president. She was the worst Secretary of State in the history of our nation. Why would she be a good president?
Hillary Clinton, I think, is a terrific woman. I mean, I'm a little biased because I've known her for years.
You support her?
I don't want to get into this because I'll get myself into trouble. But I just like her. I like her, and I like her husband.
So that's Trump nowadays. The first bite was Trump now. The second part of that was Trump when he loved her and he campaigned, or he contributed to her campaign for Senate in New York State, where she was senator, people forget, and contributed generously to the Clinton Foundation. Now he, like the others, have changed their minds. But that's what you need. You need likable, popular people to say, I like Hillary. I like Hillary. I like the Clintons. They've got to begin a counterattack, it seems to me. You know, they start with, we were dead broke, what she said, why they're doing all these speeches and so forth, which wasn't true. And it made, you know, people, certainly it allowed conservative commentators to seize on it. How could she say she was broke? She's totally out of touch. And then Benghazi, which was a slander, but it worked because it was repeated so often. You still have these knuckleheads in Congress with their hearings that nobody gives a damn about. But I think the plan of the Republicans is to keep her off base, keep her sounding as shrill as they possibly can by making charge after charge that she has to defend and debunk. It's not going to be such an easy road for her. I think the nomination is one thing. The election is going to be another. In Austin, our buddy Mike, thank you for holding. Thanks for your patience. Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, Geraldo, thanks for taking my call. You can call me Magic Mike if you like.
Okay, Geraldo. Magic Mike. All right. Take off some clothes here. We got to...
I'm a couple years younger than you are, Geraldo. I'm 68. I was listening to you a little earlier, and you asked that man, why are you so impassioned about illegal immigration? Why are you so impassioned? The same reason I'm so impassioned about it, and the same reason that other millions of older Americans, now I call it the silent majority. You remember that back in the 60s.
Yeah, Trump, we got to give Trump
right.
credit.
I was thinking of it Friday when I was listening to you on the air. I said, this is a silent generation that is enraged with everything that's happened. Why are they enraged? This issue, Geraldo, to me and many others, is the number one topic, number one issue in the world, much more important than ISIS, much more important than the economy. When you see your whole neighborhood and everything you've grown up in your culture change and actually become Hispanic, people are affected by that. Can I give you an example of Austin, New York, where
Please.
I live?
Yep. Austin, where Sing Sing is. Go ahead.
Austin, along the Hudson River, home of Sing Sing Prison, as everyone knows. 4,000 kids in the Austin school system, 4,000, 2,400 Hispanic. I go to an Austin budget vote in the high school auditorium, this high school gymnasium, 200 or 300 people there, all adults. Not one Hispanic adult there. I go walking down the street. I see a young Spanish woman on the heavy set side carrying two carriages and a baby on each side, all free. Up until 2 years ago, before I got on Medicare, I was paying $800 a month in health insurance. When your entire culture changes, when your entire world changes, Geraldo, that becomes a number one issue, not ISIS or anything else. It's outrageous what's happened here.
Let me ask you about crime in Austin.
You don't demonize them? I don't demonize them.
Okay,
I got it.
You sound like a very reasonable person. You sound like a reasonable, compassionate, heartfelt person. What about crime in Austin?
You're calming me down, Geraldo.
All right, just calm down. So what about crime in Austin?
Not too bad. Well, what he said was ridiculous. What Trump said was ridiculous. Most of the people, I don't know. There's probably more Hispanic than anything else, but because there are more Hispanic people now in the town. But that's not the reason these people come in here. They're coming here for a better life. You know that.
Of course.
But, Geraldo, it's a really large price to pay to have your lawn cut $10 cheaper to change your whole culture and language. I'll tell you that. It's a large price to pay to have a deck put on your house $500-$600 cheaper and have your whole culture and language change.
All right, Mike.
It's a heavy price to pay, my friend.
I got it, buddy. I got it. I understand. I understand that frustration, but I still say, is the fact that it's different, does that mean it's worse? When the Irish came, I keep going back to these historical antecedents. This was an essentially Protestant country. And the Irish came. So the Irish were Catholic. The Irish had been for centuries feuding, fighting for their rights against the Protestant English. And they came here and overnight, basically, they changed the demographic. They became from a almost non-existent minority to being the majority in New York City and up and down the East Coast of the United States, the still growing United States. And they encountered the same kind of thing about how our way of life has changed and all the rest of it. And did it become worse? I submit that the nation is a lot stronger today than it has ever been. Compare it to Europe. Compare it to China. Compare it to Russia. Compare it to anywhere else. Why do you think everyone wants to be here? Do you really think they want to be here to get a free ride? That they come here, as Ann Coulter said, not to work hard, to toil, but for the benefits? I don't know. The ones I've met certainly aren't coming for the benefits. They're coming for the opportunity. They're coming for the chance. They're coming for a shot at a better life for their kids. I don't want to get hung up on immigration. I always get there. I start someplace else and I end up here. I don't want to be here. I don't want to be here. It's just, I mean, I understand how that fellow really felt what he was saying. And I appreciate and I honor and I respect that. That, to me, is different than someone who deviously tries to manipulate to make a cheap political point. It's 18 minutes after 11 o'clock. No cheap political points here. The president of the Republic of Peru coming our way. Stand by. 866-HERALDO is our number. Alejandro Toledo, who was president of Peru, is on his way up with his presidential entourage coming here to our studio high above Madison Square Garden. He's written a new book called The Shared Society, A Vision for the Global Future of Latin America. I got a million things to ask him about, not the least of which is the visit just concluded of South America by Pope Francis, who really made a lot of waves down there. A year ago, Melvin Santiago, as Noam reported, a Jersey City cop was shot dead by an ex-con, three-time loser who stole a gun, Lawrence Campbell did, from a Walgreens security guard and then used it because he was all hyped up on dope to kill the rookie cop, Jersey City rookie cop. Bernie Carrick, Commissioner Carrick, and I attended that that funeral. I hate attending these funerals. They're so painful. But they have a law now under consideration by the Jersey State Legislature that should become law this fall that requires guards, private security guards, to meet all these education and training requirements set by the Jersey State Police when it comes to firearms, because, as I said, the gun used to kill the officer was stolen off a Walgreens security guard who was untrained and not versed and had to protect his own weapon. So there's Santiago's law pending now. We advocate it. There's also my friend and colleague Bill O'Reilly has a law, Katie's Law, based on Katie Steinle, the 32-year-old San Francisco woman shot in the back. O'Reilly's law would, or Katie's law proposed or promoted by O'Reilly, has 250,000 signatures already. It would require a 5-year mandatory sentence in federal prison for all those deportees who, my phone was ringing. My brother called me. If you enter felony re-enter, if you leave the country, I mean, if you get caught here as an illegal, they deport you and you come back. O'Reilly wants that felony to be punishable by a mandatory 5-year prison sentence. Right now, the law provides pretty much that it is a 5-year prison sentence, often not imposed. But in the case of the guy who killed Katie in San Francisco, he did 3 terms, almost 15 years, for felony reentry. And the knucklehead murderous dog kept coming back anyway until, for whatever reason, he shot this poor woman in the back. We still don't know why he shot her. It wasn't even a robbery. Don't know what the hell it was. But that's Katie's law. This is Melvin Santiago's law. We certainly, the latter is certainly something that we think is a good idea. Easy. Should pass that with, it's a no-brainer. Here's Gail in Westchester. Thank you, Gail, for calling 866-Geraldo. What's on your mind?
Geraldo, I love you. You're a very smart man, but I have a problem with you. What you do is you're sending us a subliminal message in the way you phrase things. There's a big difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien, and you tend to juxtapose those two issues. There's a clear difference between someone who's here illegally and someone who's here legally. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, you're definitely right about that.
Thank you. Another thing is my husband works for social services in White Plains. The majority of people who come in to the main floor for freebies are Spanish people.
What kind of freebies?
Food stamps.
They can't get food stamps if they're not
documented. Oh, yes, they can. Oh, yes, they can.
They cannot, ma'am. They cannot.
That's not true, Geraldo.
I just know that to be the law. It's not. You cannot get any federal benefits if you are here without proper documentation.
They manipulate the system, Geraldo.
Their children can get food stamps if the children were born here. They can get food stamps.
Oh, my God, Geraldo. They manipulate the system.
Well, that's different.
They get Social Security cards from North Carolina. They manage to manipulate the system.
Well, I've had the Social Security argument, but the law is very specific. They cannot get any federal benefits. mean, that, but I appreciate you, Cole. And I appreciate your first statement that you love me. I want you to cling to that emotion. Just remember that whenever you get mad at me.
I don't know.
Whether it's for something I'm doing subliminally or overtly. I want you always to remember why you like me.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you. All right. I'm very excited about President Toledo coming on the program. Interested in so many things. I love Peru. Peru, you ever been there?
No, never have.
Fabulous. Fabulous country. I mean, with some of the most incredible tourist attractions existent. Yo te llamo Perú también. I'm also named Peru. One of the great national songs of that wonderful South American nation, Peru. I'm very pleased to have visited many, many times, in all of my family many times, and to see how that country has evolved so beautifully under the guidance of people like the former president, Alejandro Toledo, who has written a new book called The Shared Society. Mr. President, welcome here to our studio in New York. How are you, sir?
Gerardo, thank you so much for inviting me. I have to begin by saying that I'm an admirer of yours for many, many years.
Thank you. I'm an admirer of your wonderful, wonderful country.
Well, listen, it's a country that has a lot of roots, a lot of history, a sense of belonging, but also it's a country that's looking at the future and together trying to shape the profile of life of our children and the children of our children by the year 2050. When the world will be 9 billion people.
9 billion, right. And South America must continue its evolution, and you speak to that in your book, The Shared Society. What's the most important thing that Peru, South America, all of us have to do?
Number one, to get in our hands one of the most effective weapons to kill the poverty, inequality, exclusion, which is the quality of education. And quality of education is intrinsically related with nutrition and health care. Life is too important. One life lost is too many. This book deliberately has been written with certain doses of irreverence academically. I'm a Stanford professor, a Harvard professor, but I decided that not to use our tools to forecast the past, but rather to take the risk to look at the future and build the life profile of our children.
The Stanford and Harvard-educated former president of Peru, Alejandro Toledo, is my guest. He's written a book, The Shared Society, A Vision for the Global Future of Latin America. I love Peru. Lima, Machu Picchu, what a place. My kids, Cusco, Iquitos. I even took my boat up the Amazon River to Iquitos on the Amazon side of Peru. I love the country. What burden do you bear, did you, certainly when you were in office, as the first representative of the indigenous people of Latin America to hold a powerful position as president? Usually it was the European descendant. You were the first Native American to hold that office in Peru. What burden did that put on you?
It's a great privilege, and yet I was sentenced when I was elected not to fail. I'm the first indigenous person that comes from the Andes who have been elected democratically in 500 years in South America. And I say South America because Benito Juarez was in Mexico first. If I will have failed, my people will never have forgiven me. I'm the result of a statistical error. In the world of probabilities, there is an error margin. I'm part of the error margin. And I swear to God that I'm going to do everything that I can and the rest of the days that God gives me to make that my people do not wait to be another statistical error, but that they have the right to learn and have access to quality of education in order to be free.
The book is The Shared Society by Alejandro Toledo, former president of Peru. What do you make of the way you've seen, you've been back in, I don't know where you've recently traveled from, but you have to have heard about Donald Trump's campaign for president and the way he has described Mexican immigrants and by extension Latin American immigrants. I wonder, what do you think? Is there a basis for his feelings in your view? Tell me how you feel about it, president.
Let me be candid with the risk of losing my visa. I respect those who made money, and hopefully they do it in this country who institutions work. But it's a lack of understanding of the role of the Latins who are the common partners of the United States. In this last election, President Obama, this election was decided in Florida. There are 17% of the United States voters are Latin descent. By the year 2050, in the United States, there will be 47% of the voting population. Conclusion, you will have a Latin descent U.S. president. So if Mr. Trump does not understand that the world has shrunk, that they are coming to this country to work for him, not always well paid, but they're looking for the future of the kids. It is misunderstanding a society that is to be shared, that is shrunk, and that he is benefited from the work of the Latin people who come to this country.
I agree with you. Before I lose you, and we'll discuss that with our listeners later, Pope Francis just concluded his visit to South America. Your take on Pope Francis, the first Latino to hold the Holy See.
I'm going to see him soon. I think he is the man who has turned around with the courage to ask forgiveness for a lot of the mistakes that the church has made over a long period of time. He recently concluded in Paraguay to visit it and saying that natural resources need to be sold, but the benefits of the natural resources need to be shared with the native communities to provide education. Not as a gift, but as a right. Poor people do not expect to be given fish away. They demand, Geraldo, the right to learn how to fish. And that's what the Pope has said. It has come the time to provide those people the right to learn how to fish without insulting the dignity of the poor. And finally, this things that we have over here,
the iPhones
are making that the poor have less patience to continue to be poor in Latin America.
That's right, because they have information. They have less patience to stay poor. The Shared Society, A Vision for the Global Future of Latin America by our honored guest, the former president of the Republic of Peru, Alejandro Toledo. Muchísimas gracias, señor presidente. Bienvenido. Y a usted y su esposa, mi país es su país.
The world has shrunk. My country is your country. Give me the privilege to receive you in my country and to show you some of the beauty and the self-esteem of our society. And if Mr. Trump will ever come to Peru, I will take it through the Amazon River to learn a little bit of the Peruvian culture that represents the Latin American culture.
Quiero ir también. I want to go too. Thank you, Mr. President. So that was nice with the president, President Toledo of Peru. How nice of him to stop by. He has a Jewish wife.
Oh, yeah? That is funny.
So it's terrific. You know, one thing, let me take Kevin. Kevin's been holding on. He's been so patient. I want to get to him. Kevin, you there?
Thanks, Geraldo.
Hi, thank you very much for holding on. Hey, so listen, what's on your mind, buddy?
I just wanted to say that I think Donald Trump should thank you because you're helping him get elected, Geraldo. Please let me explain why. We love listening to you, but like the previous caller said, you play on words. We know what's going on, Geraldo. And, you know, people are just so upset about it that he's really struck a chord. And I really think that what you're doing is actually helping him because you're infuriating your listeners because we know the statistics. And the one in California, the mother's blaming the sanctuary city situation for the murder of her daughter. He was convicted 7 times for felony convictions. He was deported 5 times. By the way, Mexico.
He was a scum dog. Scum dog, criminal, horrible person.
Mexico deports them back here. We know that also. So that's what we're dealing with, Geraldo. So, and Trump never said all Mexicans. He never said that. So what you're doing is you're playing on words, and you're the one who's stirring that up, not Trump. Trump is just telling it like it is, man.
Oh, come on, Kevin. I'm the one that's
like
I'm the most moderate voice, you know, pointing out. I mean, the people are really excoriating Donald Trump. First of all, and Donald Trump's my friend. Remember that. He's my friend, and I begged him to just go easy. It would have been so easy. You know, I can support candidates that I don't agree with them on all the issues. I mean, a lot of, like Barack Obama. I voted for him twice. People constantly point that out. Yeah, you're a Republican who voted for Obama twice. I voted for him for the reasons I always give. And I don't have to recite them. But you hear how critical I am of Barack Obama in terms of his foreign policy, particularly in the Midwest. In the Mideast, Midwest, another story. In the Mideast, it's, If I am helping Trump with my moderation, then so be it. Trump's not a bad person. He just said something that was very cruel and I think unintended. And then once he backed himself in, he got that first rush of support from people who really are so desperately concerned about undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants. That he tasted that, he liked it, that's why he didn't back up. And now, I mean, he talks about Mexico now. When he speaks about Mexico now, it is in more moderate terms, except now you have El Chapo, the narco trafficker, escaped with the obvious, cooperation of corrupt authorities. It's the only way the guy could have dug a tunnel. Was it how long was that tunnel?
It was half a mile? May have been longer than that, actually.
And a motorcycle, my goodness. All right, we just started this week. And you know what? I am particularly encouraged that people listen and disagree with me. That's so much healthier than only listening to people with whom you agree. That echo chamber that is the classic rap about talk radio. I love you. Thank you. See you tomorrow.